fantastic and formidable fans and friends. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 3, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. And along with me are our cunning and capable cast of co-host contestants.
You say that you're humble, but you seem so proud of yourself whenever you read one of your alliterative
introductions. I'm trying to get people pumped.
She's proud. Let's
do this.
Humble.
Yeah, let's do it. And here we have.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
I'm Chris.
Woo!
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's jump into our first general trivia segment, which is Pop Quiz Hot Shot. Here, let me get my random Trivial Pursuit card.
Are these really selected at random?
These are random. And today, we actually have buzzers today. Yay! Woo! Is that annoying? No more fake buzzing. Now we actually have official answer buzzers. Here we go. Blue Wedge, geography. What was named the Sandwich Islands by James Cook in 1778? Colin?
Is it Bermuda?
Incorrect. Mm. So we know there are a bunch of islands.
Yeah.
Chris?
Oh, I was going to say like a Cuban sandwich.
The correct answer is Hawaii.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, really?
Didn't want to say it.
The island.
Why didn't you want to say it?
The stakes for being wrong are too high.
But Chris and I were wrong first. You had nothing to lose.
Well, now I feel more safe. Maybe
what's the explanation?
The islands were named for the 4th Earl of Sandwich, John Montague.
Hmm.
Now, is he the Earl of Sandwich credited with inventing the sandwich, or was that a different Earl
of Sandwich? I think that's the Earl of Sandwich. I think that's a different one.
Okay. Different Earl of Sandwich?
Several Earls.
Well, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, clearly there were several Earls of Sandwich.
Yeah, they got the title.
Okay, Pink Wedge Culture. What 80s hair band alum had a recurring role on TV's Gilmore Girls?
I don't think I've passed 5 minutes of Gilmore.
So bad I don't watch that show.
No one? Colin?
I'll take a guess just because it's a free one. Vince Neil? I don't know.
Incorrect.
John Bon Jovi.
Incorrect.
That was going to be my.
The correct answer is Sebastian Bach. Sebastian.
From Skid Row, right?
Yep, from Skid Row. Yeah.
Oh. We're doing poorly on this card.
Yeah, I know. Right? This is not a good card for us.
Born Sebastian Bjork.
Well, you guys always complain about Trivial Pursuit being easy, and now it's hard.
When have I ever?
Okay. Yellow Wedge. Name two of the three women to appear on circulating U.S. currency. Dana.
I feel like I buzzed in first,
but
okay.
So Chris did beat me, but I can answer this question. I'm going to answer it anyway. I'm taking it.
Why don't you give one of them, and I'll give the other one.
All right, Sacagawea.
Yes, and Susan B. Anthony.
Correct. Yeah. There's one more, too.
Two, are they real-life women?
Yes.
There's Sacagawea, there's Susan B. Anthony on U.S. currency, and then there's,
Betsy Ross?
No, Betsy Ross. Geez, circulating U.S. currency. There's none on any bills. On coins, there's presidents and there's a Sacagawea dollar. There's a Susan B. Anthony dollar. And then, I mean, I want it like on gold coins, they have like Liberty, but like.
Yeah, it doesn't allegorical figure. Doesn't count,
right,
think,
yeah.
Right?
It is Helen Keller.
What's Helen Keller on?
Didn't specify.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Oh, okay.
Do you think she's on one of the state coins?
Like, oh,
yeah, I bet that's it.
For which state?
To the internet.
All right, Purple Wedge. What novel begins with Alex and his three droogs wearing flip horror show boots and considering a bit of the ultra violent Chris?
I feel like I'm sorry, I buzzed in too early.
Himself.
I disqualified myself, so I won't say.
Colin?
It's Clockwork Orange by Anthony Burgess.
Yes.
We didn't ask for the author, but thank
I'm
you
just
over
off.
To you. Yeah, I know.
What a show okay. off. Okay, Green Wedge, what color is a giraffe's tongue?
It is
multiple choice. So one in three chances. Blue, orange, or pink? Dana?
Blue.
Correct.
Hmm.
And scientists think that the color may prevent sunburn.
Oh.
Oh, Okay. Are they sticking? I mean, are, I know, they, are they more at risk of sunburned tongues than other animals?
Their tongues are so long, they reach them out to get the leaves on the tree.
Well, they're 15 feet closer to the sun, aren't they?
They are.
Right. Yeah, true. And that's...
Last question, Orange Wedge. What women's item did Joe Namath endorse and wear in 70s commercials? Colin.
That was Legs pantyhose.
Correct.
That's funny. I was going to guess Legs pantyhose, but you seemed like you knew it.
My eyes lit up.
Mm-hmm.
He was alive during those commercials.
So
burn.
What were these commercials about?
I think if I remember the commercial, like, it starts off with a close-up of the foot and kind of, you know, moves up the ankle, and then you realize that it's Joe Namath, and I think the point is like, even on me, these look sleek and sexy, or something like that. I remember, I've seen it on those classic commercials.
Maybe he's like, especially on me,
sexy.
Strictly a comfort issue.
And we also have our Kickstarter backer question. This one is from Alex Warrow from San Francisco, California. And I don't, this question in particular, I'm not really counting on anybody actually getting, but it is interesting. So when or what century and what country was the first hot air balloon duel fought?
Whoa.
Duel. All right.
When and in what country?
Yeah. Colin.
I'm going to guess China, because these things, it's always China. It's always like they were the first to do it. I don't know. 10th century China.
Incorrect. Chris.
18th century France.
Wow.
Wait, is that right?
Well, France is right.
I was going to guess France too. Yeah.
It is technically the 19th century. And so in 1808 in France, there was a duel between two Frenchmen, and this wasn't like a Cirque du Soleil spectacle for the people. It was actually two men who were pissed off at each other, quarreling over like a famous dancer as a mistress. They believed that they had elevated minds, so that they had to naturally duel on hot air balloons in the sky. So the two guys climbed onto their own hot air balloon, and they flew. They were in air. And they dueled. And so it's between Mr. de Grandpré and Monsieur de Pique. And de Pique first fired, and he missed. And de Grandpré aimed and actually, you know, shot, hit his balloon, de Pique's balloon, and the basket tipped. And de Pique fell headfirst to his death.
Wow.
He cheated.
I would shoot for the balloon too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the crafty way to do it, but I don't know. I thought the point of the duel was you're supposed to shoot them, like shoot the person.
Oh yeah,
that
is supposed to be honorable.
Although they were.
Yeah,
it is supposed to be honorable.
Yeah.
You know the saying, Dana. There's no honor in balloon dueling.
The old saying. Well, it's an old.
You can't trust people in balloon.
It's an old French saying. Yeah.
So Alex. Alex loves awesome things, and so the first recorded blunderbuss duel fought from hot air balloons seemed very appropriate. And Alex, his interesting fact is that he has a birthmark shaped like a Maine lobster.
All right.
Didn't specify where, but somewhere.
Please do not
send us a
picture.
Where the lobster is from.
And we have a second Kickstarter backer question. This one is from Jack Young from Richmond Hill, Ontario in Canada. His question is, where is the largest desert in the world? Chris.
Antarctica. Yeah.
You are correct.
Nice. Because a desert is nothing to do with sand and cactuses and everything to do with the amount of rainfall you get.
That is correct. A desert is classified as an area that receives an extremely low amount of precipitation. So Jack saw this on a TV show and he thought it was interesting. Yeah, and Jack loves video games and movies. All right. Good job, everybody's brains. Let's get into our topic of the week. And today we're going to be dishing about some outrageously luxurious gourmet foods and the reasons and stories behind why some ingredients are just so gosh darn expensive.
We would eat Kraft dinner.
Of course we would. We just eat more.
And buy really expensive ketchups with it.
That's
But before we get into champagne wishes and caviar dreams, I want to share a few recent bizarre food-related headlines. So let me try to get my best old-timey 1940s voice.
This week in the news.
Extra.
Freedom on the march.
So here's some actual headlines, for recent headlines. Extra, sex-starved flies drown their woes in alcohol. Did you guys see this story?
No.
I was one of those where I saw the headline but didn't actually click through it, yeah.
So there are a bunch of scientists, and they found out they would do an experiment. They would put male flies into a container with a female fly that just made it. And so basically the female isn't really in the mood, you know, if you know what I'm saying. and so she basically would try to get away or even kick the males. The scientists kept the male flies kind of trying for a long time. And after that experience, they would take the rejected flies and put them in vials. And they're given the choice of normal food or food laced with alcohol. And most of these male flies, sex-starved male flies, would go get plastered and actually choose the alcohol-laced food.
You know what I'm talking about, guys.
Yeah. Sounds like my Saturday nights.
And our second headline is, meatball eating bear stalks California neighborhood. A large black bear entered a California garage in Southern California, and he opened up the refrigerator and ate Costco meatballs from
they
this dude's house.
Yeah.
So this dude comes back to his house and saw the bear was just camping out, like eating these Costco meatballs, and was like, "Whoa, I gotta get out of here."
And it was like, "Whoa, my meatballs!" Also, a bear.
Damn you, bear! All right, so let's start talking about our expensive foods, and you know, what are some of the things that you think of when you think of like luxurious, rich food ingredients?
I mean, caviar, first thing that comes to mind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, caviar.
Think like, yeah.
Foie gras.
Foie gras, definitely. Truffles is one.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely one of the things I always associate with like luxury is Kobe beef and Wagyu beef.
Mm. Well, the term Wagyu actually means Japanese cow. The
that
Wagyu
seems so
beef.
Unexotic now.
Yeah, sorry about that. And so Wagyu, you can actually, I mean, that this can actually refer to Japanese style beef, no matter where it's produced. It is produced in the United States, it is produced in Australia, and it's all called Wagyu. Kobe beef is beef specifically from Kobe. So if somebody is selling you Kobe beef and it's not made in the Japanese, you know, prefecture that contains the city of Kobe, they're ripping you off.
Right. So so Kobe can be Wagyu, but not the other way around.
Exactly. Kobe,
not necessarily.
Kobe way, is Wagyu. Right. Wagyu is not Kobe.
Not necessarily.
Finkel
right.
is Einhorn.
Finkel, Einhorn.
Wagyu from the U.S. is generally crossbred with something else, like it's crossbred with Angus. The beef that you eat these days, right, is not produced by cows just sort of randomly roaming the pasture and having sex with other cows, right? I mean, it's all like they're making sure that the cows are they sort
cows.
Of very carefully manage it so they can have purebred cows but not inbred cows, you know, just, you know, making sure that they continue to put in certain genetic materials and make sure it's all cool.
So what makes Wagyu or Kobe beef so delicious? Like it is a very fatty type of meat.
Yeah, well, it's not that there's like more fat, it's that the fat is more consistently marbled throughout, and also because the muscle fibers are longer, which makes it more tender. And to do this, I mean, there's a whole various, I mean, a lot of people have heard these stories about they feed the cows beer and they feed the cows only grains and it's a certain diet, and then they massage the cow to make sure, you know.
Wait, when it's alive?
Yeah, when it's alive.
Oh, that's so cute.
Oh, yeah, the cows up until the point at which they are brutally murdered are treated very, very well.
This is pretty good. getting massaged.
Right up until the bullet through the head, they are having a good life. And you know, all of that is true. And of course, I mean, obviously, you know, different breeders will have different ways that they do it. But it's not that you can just take any cow and just fill him up with beer.
Right. Yeah. Nor can you can't convert him. Like, you know, the cow's already full grown. Just switch it over. over to beer and start giving it massages.
It's like, well, I'm massaging my cow. It's like, well, why? You know, to turn him into Wagyu beef. Like, that's not actually how it works. It's specific breeds, but I mean, over the years they had done this, that the massaging was because there wasn't really a whole lot of room for cows to walk around in the mountainous, you know, sort of uneven terrains of Japanese farms or, you know, in a small space. So they would massage it because it couldn't go out and get exercise.
So it was a way of maintaining or replacing the exercise. They're not luxuriating them.
Oh, no. So
put on some Enya and some incense.
Some giant cucumber slices over the cow's eyes.
Yeah. That's so cute.
So now you know when you go to buy, where Kobe beef versus Wagyu beef, even though it says Wagyu, it doesn't necessarily mean they flew it in from Japan.
Don't be tricked.
Right.
There are so many dishes out there that are very expensive. I feel like one of the common ingredients among all these expensive, you know, version of burger or pasta or whatever is truffles.
The truffle, yes.
And it's like, how and why are truffles so expensive? And again, it goes to rarity. It's not like, oh, mm-hmm. someone has I put up a truffle farm and I just, right. you know, farm truffles. Like, they grow in the wild and you have to have specially trained animals to mm-hmm. go find them.
The pig. As you say, you can't just plant them anywhere. It's because they need the right humidity and the right pH balance in the soil
and the right
other microorganisms. Mm-hmm.
And somebody else owns those trees in that land. Yeah. and those pigs.
Yeah. And do you guys know why the pigs are such awesome truffle hunters?
I'm not, what is it?
So the truffle hunting pigs usually are girl pigs or girl piggies. And it's innate for them to naturally seek out truffles because in truffles, there is a compound that smells, you know, to the pigs similar to a sex pheromone of a boy boar, saliva. So the girl piggy's like, oh, man, I'm going to find myself a stud. And it's like, oh, what is this? It's a mushroom. And the farmer's like, thank you.
Oh, how disappointing for those girls. I know,
exactly. Oh.
The food episode is always the sex episode. There's so much crossover.
Every day they're like, why are these guys hiding under trees from me? I don't understand.
Man, where are all the boys? And the most shocking truffle fact for me, so shocking, and I can't believe it, that truffle oil that you see, there's truffle fries, truffle whatever. Oh, the salad is sprinkled with truffle oil on menus. You're like, wow, that sounds so luxurious and indulgent. Truffle oil actually doesn't contain truffles.
Did you not? You did not know this?
Did not know this.
I watch shows with Gordon Ramsay on it. And whenever somebody uses truffle oil, he's like, "You donkey! Truffle oil doesn't have truffles in it. It's perfume, which is what it is. It's like perfumed olive oil. It smells like truffles.
I mean, is it just the cheap version of something that used to have truffles, or did truffle oil never was?
I don't think that there is a way to take actual truffles and make.
I mean, I guess you can just sort of drown truffles in oil and hope that the flavors infuse. But I think to get that potency,
you'd have to waste a lot of truffles.
It wouldn't be worth your time,
right.
or your money.
So what's actually in truffle oil? Mostly, it's olive oil, which has an artificial flavor.
Yeah,
using like a synthetic agent mm-hmm. that smells a perfume. Lot like it is. Mm-hmm. It is perfume. Man, that just totally blows my mind. Well, so those are some of the common expensive ingredients. I'm going to be talking about some of the very expensive, bizarre ingredients. Mm. And Dana, you go first because yours is truly bizarre.
Yeah. So
how do we start this?
How do we start it? So I found a food from Sardinia. It's called Casumarzu, and it's otherwise known as maggot cheese. And it's actually like pecorino cheese. So it's a sheep cheese that they slice some of the rind off and set it outside. And cheese flies come and lay their eggs in it. Mm-hmm. And
I've had cheese this has happened to before. And then the next step, of course, is that they throw it away because it's garbage, right?
No, this cheese is special. So the flies go into it. The maggots, like, eat the cheese. They start the decomposition process. So the cheese becomes like soft and creamy and squishy.
Oh my goodness.
It has lagrimas. It has tears. It starts sweating. It's it's going to return to
but
the earth.
But isn't that
cheese?
That's basically,
right, yeah.
So, like,
and it's full of maggots.
Yeah. The creaminess is actually like maggot poop, right? Because they're eating the cheese and they're expelling what
they're processing it for
you. Yeah, they're processing it.
So the thing is, you have to, if you're going to eat this cheese, you have to get to it before the maggots die, because once the maggots die in it, it's poison. Like, it's going to make you sick, you might die. So you need to eat it with the maggots still alive.
Oh, good God.
And what is this called, so I can never order it and make sure that if I see it on the menu, I leave the restaurant?
So it's really hard to get. That's another thing. So it's rare. They say it costs twice as much as pecorino cheese.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know if you could really get it in the States. But
I don't think so.
It's called Kasu Marzu.
Yeah.
If you ask for maggot cheese, they'll know what you're talking about.
They'll know what you're talking about.
I went into McDonald's and I asked if they had, instead of. Well, I wanted to get the chicken bacon ranch, but instead of the jack cheese, I asked for the maggot cheese.
Here's a trick if you're going to eat it. You need to cover it before you put it in, like, put your hand over it before you put it in your mouth, because the maggots can jump about 6 inches.
Oh,
so they might,
God.
They might jump into your eyes.
So wait. You're supposed to eat it with the maggots still in the cheese? Can you knock on the side of the cheese and they come running out or something?
No, okay. So the way you get rid of the maggots, if you don't want to eat the maggots.
No, I do not.
you put them in a paper bag and you seal it, and you'll hear like little taps against the paper bag. And that's the maggots like jumping out of the cheese because they can't get enough air. Huh. And then they die. Oh.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what? Thank you very much, Dana. I'll remember these helpful tips when I don't eat this food.
It's an aphrodisiac.
Oh, I see.
You should know about it.
I'll stick with chocolates and oysters. Right. Thank you very much.
Is it an aphrodisiac? Because after a woman gets so disgusted by that, they'll have sex with pretty much anybody.
Anything
like,
seems
yeah,
good by comparison.
Well, yeah.
And you might be drinking, they drink a lot of wine with it.
You'd have to. I'd have to have 3 drinks before I even ordered it.
Oh, my God.
Well, I can follow on to that, actually. Not things.
Speaking of maggot cheese.
Yeah, speaking of maggot cheese, so I wanted to talk about something that I had heard about, which is called Dojo Nabe. Not like the Cobra Kai dojo from Karate Kid. Dojo Nabe is is a type of fish, an eel-like fish, but it's a fish. It's called the loach in English, dojo. And Dojo Nabe, what they basically do is they take a block of tofu and they put it into a bowl, and then they take boiling hot oil and then they put the boiling hot oil into the bowl with the tofu. This is all prepared table side, of course.
Sounds good so far.
Sounds good so far. And then they take the live loaches and they put it. No, all right, we boil lobsters alive and stuff like that. But they take the live loaches and they put it into the boiling oil. And with the loaches, and the loaches are none too happy about this.
Wait, I'm sorry. What are loaches?
They're little baby fish. They look like little eels.
Loaches, okay.
Loaches, little baby fish. So they're about a couple of centimeters long at this point. You know? And they pour them into the oil with the tofu, and the loaches go, oh sugar,
what the hell?
Yeah. And they're like, it's super hot in here. Oh look, a cold piece of tofu. I'll burrow into the tofu because it's cooler in here. They will seek refuge, so they will then, all the fish will burrow inside of the tofu, where they of course die because the tofu is not the tofu is not cold enough, or won't be cold enough to keep them from being cooked. But what you have is a piece of tofu with fish in it that have all been freshly cooked in oil. So if you think about it, it is not very nice to do to the fish.
It's very
clever. But it's probably pretty delicious.
I wonder if you could put other things in the oil and make the fish.
You are so evil.
No, I'm not.
You can do it with bears, but who has that much tofu?
You need a gigantic block of tofu to get the bear to burrow inside.
You lure them in with Costco meatballs. With
Make a really big Costco meatball.
Come on, bears. Come into this block of tofu. My sweet tofu house.
I spent $12,000 on tofu just for this meal.
For this moment. God, it's delicious.
And that Colin, you have another weird animal-related expensive food.
Yeah, all of you. Yeah, as we're getting here, it's a lot of crazy animal involvement. And, so this one is not super, super, super expensive, but it was just so strange, and it is rare, and it is considered a gourmet delicacy in France. So this is got into this by reading about François Mitterrand. And he was the ex-president of France, died in 96. And I stumbled across a story about his last meal. and got into discovering the ortolan, which is a French delicacy. It's a little bird, the ortolan bunting. And I'll come back to Francois Mitterrand in a second.
Sounds like a baseball term.
It does, yeah, the ortolan bunting. Oh, I love those guys. They're going to have a great season this year. The ortolan is a tiny little bird. It's a bird about the size of your thumb or your big toe. They are indigenous to... They're tiny, tiny little birds. And it's a member of the bunting family. It's a specific type of the bunting. They're indigenous to regions of France, and it's been considered a delicacy going back to Roman times to eat the ortolan. Now, you're okay, I've eaten birds before, chickens, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an unusual method. When you eat the ortolan...
Is it the whole ortolan?
You eat the whole ortolan, and I'll get there.
How would you debone it?
Well, they're so tiny. Yeah. They're so tiny. So yeah. the delicacy gourmet method of eating ortolan is you catch the ortolan, you force feed it, usually millet. I've read also some figs, I guess, in Roman times.
Man, the French really love
force feeding. They love the
force feeding.
You force feed the ortolan until it's ready to be eaten. You drown it alive. I mean, I guess he's alive until he drowns. You drown it in...
Because the fear tastes good.
You drown it in Armagnac, which is a brandy, a very old type of brandy. So you drown the little force-fed bird in brandy. He dies. You then roast the bird. You pluck off the feathers. And I've read you pluck off the feathers. You roast the bird, and then you eat the bird all in one bite. You put the entire roasted... ortolan into your mouth. Mm-hmm. I've read that the sort of the preferred method is you hold it by the beak, you put it in your mouth, you bite off everything except the beak. This is the entire bird now in your mouth, bones, I mean everything,
organs,
force fed and roasted, and you basically chew it down. You chew it all in one glorious little bite. Now the weird little ritual. Yeah.
Sorry, why not the beak? I think it's just the poison part.
I think it's just too crunchy, maybe, or too indigestible. Maybe it's just because it gives you a little handle. It's like the drumstick on it.
Oh yeah, sure.
But the other weird ritual around eating the ortolan is that you drape a napkin over your head. This is the traditional way of eating it. You drape a large table napkin over your head and you huddle under it while you're eating the bird. And it apparently is to do two things. The one thing is as the gourmet, you want to get all the aromas and every just little bit of succulence of the ortolan. Another possibility is that it is just too gross for other people to see what you're eating.
I think it's that.
I think you're pretending you're Sylvester and you're eating Tweety Bird and you're like under the little...
But there's a very poetic reason for it too, which again, and this goes back to the tradition of time, is that you're covering yourself from God so that God doesn't see you eating this little songbird that you have force-fed and drowned alive in brandy and roasted and eaten whole. Mm. And they do. They talk about that you cover yourself with the thing to hide yourself from God as you eat this. Another common practice, I guess, in Roman times anyway, and still in France, was blinding the birds. So it's this poor bird cannot catch a break. He's just flying through the forest one day. Next thing you know, they would blind them so that it messes with their day-night circadian rhythm, so that they wouldn't know when to stop eating, I guess. I think this is why...
Little Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle blindfolds. No, you're Michelangelo and you're Donatello.
Just set his clock back. It'll fool him. But I think the French figured out that, you know, that we don't need to blind them if we can just force feed them. So back to Francois Mitterrand. So this has been a delicacy for centuries in France. And when he was on his deathbed, the practice had become outlawed at the time. But he, as part of his hours and hours and hours long last meal, he requested some ortolan as part of his meal, and of course found a chef willing to prepare them. Even though it was illegal at the
time.
Are
they cute?
They're very cute. I mean, it's a bird the size of your thumb.
popcorn chicken.
Yeah, the OG. Popcorn chicken. Yeah.
It is.
It is the original popcorn chicken.
So my research to bizarre expensive food is also related to animals. And this one is called the Kopi Luwak coffee. And this type of coffee, which is known to be the world's most rare, smoothest, most flavorful, most awesomest coffee.
Does this involve something pooping the coffee?
It does.
That's the one.
You got it. So this coffee, it's about $300 per pound, and only 500 pounds of these beans are produced each year in Sumatra. And so, yep, you're right. There is a smallish foraging little tropical raccoon called the palm civet civet.
Civet? I think it's a civet.
Very classy.
A Honda civet?
And this little raccoon would look for the sweetest coffee fruit, or I guess coffee cherries. Mm-hmm. And they would swallow the fruit whole.
Right.
And the animal in his stomach, they only digest the fleshy fruit part. So the undigested coffee beans pass through the system. And people collect the beans afterwards. Yeah. They clean it, of course, and you know they roast and proceed
naturally.
Yes. Yeah, proceed your usual coffee roasting ritual.
Now the reason that they take them out of the poop, as opposed to just grabbing as opposed to just grabbing off the bush, there's something like it changes the chemical composition, yeah. Right?
So the little raccoons have this unique enzyme in their GI system. And it penetrates, all the fruit is being digested, but these enzymes and acids penetrate through the coffee beans and neutralize the bitter oils in the beans. And it is said that it causes 25 otherwise unreachable flavors in the bean to be released during brewing. So I'm sure there have been...
Flavors are poop. Sharp.
More poop and poop. And so, yep, that's the most expensive coffee in the world is because it is
animal eats it.
Foraged
it
from
must
poop.
Be pre-processed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're not farming it. It's just, there's how many raccoons live in the forest.
Yeah, so I don't know if they have just a bunch of pet raccoons sort of at bay and be like, feast, yeah. You guys. Today is the day.
Here you go, guys. Here's a bunch of newspapers. Go do your business. Yeah. Yeah.
Because they don't make that much of it. Yeah,
they don't even make that much coffee to begin with.
If they were French, they would just force feed
them. Like, yeah, I don't want the French.
It would be at Starbucks right now.
I like little raccoon newspapers.
They're giving a little bowl of coffee beans, a little tiny copy of Uncle John's bathroom reader. Yeah.
I'm imagining little tiny reading glasses on his nose. this is just another one of these foods that where I'm like, someone had to be the first one. Like, you know, like I believe that it is good coffee, but who someone, you know what would make good coffee, Roger, is if we
the cat poop didn't work out so great.
Maybe. Honey, the civet ate the coffee again. Yeah. And you know, food is scarce, so they're just like,
We'll wash it.
Maybe
they seem
to have passed relatively. They still look like coffee beans. Let's wash them real good, you know.
And I like Data's idea that this was like number 9 in a series of animals that they had tried.
Like, this is definitely the best one so far. I don't know if it's the best though.
I know. Should we move on to having the bear eat them?
Yeah, after he ate the meatballs.
Let's have the bear eat the civet with the coffee.
That is the best coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
And the civet that came out tasted pretty good too.
There are 29 flavor profiles.
All right.
Well, everyone, at this point in our activities, I would like to announce that I have prepared a special food-related trivia quiz for you all.
Yay!
All right.
This is a type of question that has certainly come up on our pub trivia nights before, so it's important stuff to know. So here we go. Here's how this puzzle is going to work. I am going to tell you there are many, many names of foods that we use every day here in America that come from foreign languages. So what I'm going to tell you is the English translation of the name of the food, and you are going to tell me what the common foreign word is that we use in English for that food. For example, if I were to say Wagyu, if I were to say Japanese cow, you would say Wagyu. Okay. Yes.
Are we buzzing in?
Yes, we are buzzing in. So we'll start with something a little bit simple. The first one is fat liver. Dana was first.
Foie gras.
Yes, foie gras means a fat liver. Little donkey. Karen?
Burrito.
Yes, very good. Small oven.
Oh, God.
Petit four.
Yes.
That's right.
Like petite four?
petit four.
Petit four
means a small oven. Yes, forno in Italian, four in French.
Nice.
Pierced body. Karen?
Kebab?
No.
Oh,
sorry.
That was a good guess.
Pierced body. I'll give you a hint. We've actually had this question before in trivia. We got it right. I'll give you another hint. I'll give you another hint.
Language?
Pierced body. Another hint. The language is actually Japanese. Language.
Oh.
Wait. Okay. Dana?
Yakitori?
Not yakitori. No. Oh, no. Karen, you already answered. Colin gets a chance.
I was going to guess yakitori as well.
It's not yakitori. It actually, the pierced body is the Japanese are sort of talking around it. Oh, okay, Karen, you want to try again?
Sashimi.
Sashimi, yes. The idea there is not pierced body, but cut meat. They're giving it a little bit of a polished edge there by saying pierced body. Yes. Sashimi, of course, being the type of sushi that has no rice, that is simply slices of prepared or raw fish. How about little ears?
God.
It's a little bit more obscure. This one's from Italian. Dana?
Is it like orchiette, little pasta?
It is orchiette, yes. Yes, yes. The little ear-shaped pasta.
Good one.
How about little fat one? That's right. It means little fat one. Dana is rocking these out.
Yeah.
Gordita. Yeah. Yes. It's a little fat one.
Gordita
is in gordo.
Gordo.
As in fat.
Gordo.
Yes.
Fat.
Let's do the last. This is the last one. It's a little tough. Quill, as in a quill pen.
Like feather quill.
Yeah, like a feather quill, with the idea that it's a pen. That's your hint. Quill.
Quill.
Karen.
I'm going to go with kebab again.
No, it is not kebab. Here's your hint. This is also from Italian. This is also from Italian. The object itself is actually shaped. It has a cylindrical shape, like a quill. Yes?
Guessing penne?
Penne, absolutely.
Wow,
the word penne comes from penna, meaning quill or feather, and it is a cognate of the English word pen.
Wow. Ooh. That's a good one. Yeah, you were rocking the gastronomy
I think Dana is the winner of this quiz.
I like food. I like to eat.
Can I throw in one trivia question I came across when we were reaching the gourmet
stuff? Do it, Colin.
All right. All right. This is a quote.
This one right.
This is a quote. I'm confident one of you guys can get this. This is a quote. I'm going to read a quote. I want you to tell me whom this quote is attributed to. Come quickly. I am drinking the stars.
Oh, I like it.
Come quickly. I am drinking the stars.
I like my drunken aunt with the <Dana.
laughs> Chris.
Vincent Van Gogh.
Oh, no.
That's a good guess.
I'll give you one hint.
Okay.
Come quickly, I'm drinking the stars. This was a religious man. I'm going to get it, Karen, because Chris already had a bite of the apple.
All right.
Dom Perignon.
Yes.
Whoa.
Dom Perignon.
I am
fantastic.
A genius. Good
yeah.
One.
Yeah. So I guess he's, he didn't invent champagne, but he's credited with, kind of perfecting it or getting it to our state. Yeah. I thought that was awesome.
Wow.
Dom Perignon. All right. Well, speaking of drinking stars, let's talk about drinking stars and eating gold. Goldschlager. Like, how can something with real gold be so cheap?
Poisonous. Yeah,
yeah.
In college.
It's pretty gross.
Right.
It's pretty. You convince yourself that it's good because I'm drinking gold. I remember in college, we couldn't get our minds around that. We'd be going, and there was, no, it's not real gold. And no, it is.
Right.
It's
yeah,
real gold.
Yeah,
look, it says on the label.
Yeah.
But yeah, even at that, we were too cheap to buy Goldschlager. We bought, I'm not lying, we bought the knockoff Gold Strike, which is, it was the knockoff brand and came in a plastic bottle.
Oh.
So even cheaper.
Did it still have gold inside of it?
Well, our joke was that it was made with fool's gold inside.
Nice. That actually might hurt you if it was visible. Yeah. I mean, the reason why you can, I'm venturing a guess here, and I'm sure that Karen, since you've looked this up, you actually know, but I mean, you can pound gold incredibly thinly.
Yeah, yeah.
So very, very, very thin that it's actually not that much gold at all. And that's why you can go to the craft store and buy gold leaf very, very small quantities.
Actually, in Goldschlager, the actual amount of gold is very, very small, and it's almost negligible. There is probably less than a tenth of a gram of gold in Goldschlager, which comes out to about, in US dollars, $6.20.
At current exchange rates.
As of this
year. So $6.20 for the whole bottle divided by how many shots that is.
So you're, I mean, you're drinking. That's why your Goldschlager shot does not really cost that much.
Yeah, you're drinking pennies there.
And you're drinking, no offense to the people at Goldschlager Incorporated who will no doubt hear this. You're drinking some pretty gross, garbage alcohol. That just happens.
What is actually Goldschlager? The liquor?
It's like a cinnamon.
It's a cinnamon. It's like cinnamon schnapps. So it's kind of spicy and... hot and
I kind of like it. I was gonna tell you. That's why I was so quiet during. I
was like, stop making fun of Goldschlager, you guys.
It's not that bad.
True or false, you guys? Only sparkly wine from the Champagne region of France can be called champagne.
Depends on who you ask, I think.
I'm gonna go with the fact that I've bought bottles of champagne that say champagne on them, and they ain't from France.
I'm gonna say true and false.
They're from Jersey, so I'll go with.
I think it's a little. I always thought that was the case too. Like they call them California sparkling wines. Mm-hmm. We're here in California, because they're not allowed to call it champagne. It's But I was doing a little bit of digging into this, and it is pretty funny. They in Europe and in France that is the law. Yes, champagne is sparkling wine that comes from the Champenois grapes in the Champagne region of France, nowhere else by law in European Union and France. The reason that we're not held to that standard here in America, and this
is we're American.
Yeah, we're America. No, this is great. This was so important to the French that they essentially worked in this law into the Treaty of Versailles. They made it essentially a condition upon all the signatories of the Treaty of Versailles that yes, we agree by law.
Wait, I'm sorry. The Treaty of Versailles that ended World War I?
The very same. Yes, the one. Yeah. So at the end of World War I,
they snuck it in.
Getting all the terms of reparations, they managed to get all the signatories to agree that yeah, champagne only comes from Champagne Valley, but because the U.S. Senate at the time was fearing essentially this would lead to like a League of Nations kind of thing, they rebelled, and the U.S. Senate did not ratify the Treaty of Versailles. So the U.S. has never ratified the Treaty of Versailles. So we can call anything we want champagne,
yeah, right? We should name all our wine champagne. Yeah.
To this day, still technically fighting World War I.
Well, no. So I did actually do a little bit more. They did, in fact, in the next administration. I don't have it in front of me, but it was another act of Congress, Senate. They passed another amendment officially ending the hostilities, but with no mention of the champagne.
With no mention of champagne whatsoever. Oh.
So in California, sparkling wine can call it champagne if we want to. Mm-hmm.
So here's another misconception. Saffron, which is we know is probably the most rare spice in the world, is the most expensive by weight. True or false?
Well, you just said it was a misconception, so I'm going to go with false.
I'm going to say true. I'm going to pretend, because I always thought that was true. I always thought that, yeah, saffron was.
Well, it's super expensive, but I mean, who's to say there might not be something else out there?
Maybe there's an animal that poops something. Right. I don't know.
So it is true. It is the most expensive by weight. The labor cost is just insane to collect all these stigmas of these different flowers. They can go for like $6,000 per kilo, which is $6 per gram. Mm. But the thing is, we don't need to use that much saffron.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So really, an average amount, like in your paella or in your desserts or whatever that you use saffron for, elixirs, you pretty much use an average of $1.50 worth of saffron. Mm-hmm. So it is true. It is really expensive, but it's not, you don't use it a lot.
It does. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a friend who's a good chef and he loves cooking, and he's got this little container of a saffron, and you would think it was uranium the way it was packed.
It's like
four levels deep. It's a bag inside of a box, and then it's just this tiny little.
There's a cerebus.
It's like the size of your thumbnail down in the middle there. Yeah.
But what we do use a lot is vanilla, and vanilla actually is the second most expensive spice. It's ubiquitous, but it just doesn't
weigh a lot, and a little goes a long way.
Exactly. When I was researching about vanilla, I don't know why all my stories are related to different animals or specifically rodent animals. Do you know what castoreum is? It's a substance. And I'm going to say no. You guys don't know what that is.
I'm going to guess it's something to do with castor beans. I don't know.
Castoreum is simply, and I'm going to say this as classy as possible, but these are not classy words.
Uh-oh.
Anal beaver juice.
Oh.
What?
So castoreum is...
Is it like all the best things in the world come from the butts of little rodents?
It seems like it. Right. So castoreum is a substance produced by the glands of a beaver located between the anus and genitals of a beaver.
Huh.
And guess what? It is in the United States, it is FDA approved. And what you use castoreum for is to highlight specifically vanilla flavoring and raspberry flavoring.
Okay.
And so butt juice from a beaver makes
raspberry and vanilla flavored things taste a lot better.
I like the flavor profiles.
The synergy of the two flavors.
In addition, not only is it approved by the FDA, they don't have to call it castoreum or anal beaver juice.
They workshopped anal beaver juice. It just did not test.
They sold it in giant cans at Costco, and just nobody bought it.
Yeah, I just can't move these.
Mm-hmm. So they're officially referenced simply as natural flavoring.
That's on everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when you're reading the ingredients list, and it says natural flavoring. And you're,
it could be
anal beaver juice.
Right.
I'm gonna assume from now on it does mean that.
As long as it's not the low quality artificial anal beaver juice, it could be.
Just the good stuff.
Just the good stuff.
So, yeah. Yeah. So anytime you're eating a...
But it's raspberry vanilla jam flavor. It's not even raspberry jam. Flavor. Like you'd imagine it in a hot dog or something. It's in the ice cream.
It might be in your favorite ice cream. You don't know.
Just imagine when you're taking that bite of that delicious raspberry ice cream sundae. Just fluids expressing themselves mightily like Old Faithful from that mysterious area between the anus and the genitals of a beaver.
This seemed like such a classy show at the start of the podcast.
We're going to talk about elegant
gourmet
foods.
Delicacies.
Maggot cheese. Anal beaver juice. Yeah.
Again.
Coffee poop.
Again, I wonder how do they discover this? How?
Right.
That's true.
I think it is.
I was down there for something else.
You know what? It's like I was sleeping with my mouth open.
Yeah.
And a beaver walked by
with some raspberries
and sprayed it in, and it just tasted horrible until I ate a raspberry off a nearby tree, and it just made the flavor pop.
Yeah. Mwah. What can I add to this raspberry to make it taste better? Oh, I know.
Mom, the beaver expressed his anal fluids all over my ice cream again. Just eat it. There's no more ice cream. Wow.
Oh, dear.
Really accents the flavor.
All right, let's do our final quiz segment. It's a new segment, and I'm going to call this one Original Formula, and it's the company edition. So in Original Formula, I will give you a quick description of a name origin, and you have to guess what the actual name is. So today we're going to do companies and corporation names. And so, for example, I'll say the Greek goddess of victory, and you guys will say
Nike.
Yep. All right. Here we go. And these are actually really interesting. I'm going to position them from easy to hard, naturally. And buzz in with your barnyard buzzers. Get them ready. All right. So this first one, here we go. So the company's original name is Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company. Colin?
That's 3M.
Correct. Which is a lot easier to say than Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company.
Indeed.
Here we go. The literal translation of this company is Entrusted Heaven. Chris Kohler.
Would this be Nintendo?
Correct.
Oh.
I snuck this one in for
you. Oh, thanks.
Entrusted Heaven or?
Yeah. Entrusted or Trust Heaven.
Ah. Entrusted to Heaven. They made gambling products. Somebody has since come out and said that it might mean something else, but there's a whole lot of like back and forth over what the name of the company actually means. But yeah, it contains the characters.
We'll go with that.
Trust in Heaven. Yeah, for purposes of this. Yeah.
Okay. This beverage company was named after founders Roy Allen and Frank Wright. Colin?
A&W Root Beer?
Correct.
Oh.
Roy Allen and Frank Wright.
There really was an A&W.
There was, yeah.
Not just come up with it by a marketing team.
Right. The abbreviation of a Latin phrase meaning healthy soul in a healthy body. Colin.
It's Asics, the shoes, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Asics. Which sounds like a science-y term, like Asics, like you know, kinetics or robotics.
I just bought a pair of Asics shoes. I swear, that's so funny.
So it stands for Anima Sana in Corpore Sano, which is healthy soul in a healthy body.
Whoa.
I did not know it was an abbreviation for
that. Yeah, I really thought it was something science-y. Yeah.
I just assumed that they weren't going for basics and forgot the B.
That's what I always
So this company's name is from the name of the founder, Hans Riegel. And the city that he's from, which is Bonn in Germany.
Hans Riegel from Bonn.
From Germany.
Oh!
Colin.
Haribo?
Correct!
Oh.
Whoa.
Wow!
Haribo, the gummy bear company.
Oh!
Whoa. And it's interesting because when you think of Haribo, it almost sounds like Japanese.
It sounds Japanese, yeah.
Haribo, Hans Riegel from Bonn.
Huh.
Very good, Colin.
Good one.
All right, here we have our last one. The word was invented by Jonathan Swift and used in his book Gulliver's Travels. It represents a person who is repulsive in appearance and barely human. That was the original meaning.
Oh.
Darn it. I heard this before, but what is the answer?
What type of company is it?
This is a tech online web company. Chris?
CompuServe.
incorrect. Good try. We know this term more as a Western term.
As a Western term?
Like a country Western term.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I get it. I know.
Yahoo?
Correct.
Yeah.
Dana.
It is Yahoo.
Yahoo.
The word was invented by Jonathan Swift.
Right.
And it totally doesn't mean Yahoo, let's go.
Right.
It means a person who is gross.
So it's really closer to who are these bunch of Yahoos?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow.
And that's the end of our show. So thank you, everybody, for joining me today. And thank you, listeners, for listening in. Hope you guys didn't get too grossed out by today's topics. But they were interesting nonetheless.
And they're never going to forget them ever if they ever come up.
Exactly. Thank you all. And again, we're on iTunes. Give us some feedback on the different segments or the different things that you like. We love your input. And we're also on our website, which is goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Later.